So you know how we always start a message with like this really personal story where we kind of share a lot of our lives? I'm not going to tell you about my sex life story, guys. That's not going to happen. Everyone's like, that was a bit awkward. But you know what? Over the last couple of months, probably a year now, I've been studying this pretty heavily. And so I've heard all kinds of stories from people. I've talked to a couple recently who, you know, they've been married, I don't know what, 30-some years? Like the best couple. They take incredible care of each other. They haven't had sex in years. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it seems like it's a white elephant in their lives. I talk to couples all the time who were, you know, anywhere from kind of mildly committed to fully committed. They're talking about sex drives and who's got more, who's got less. Oh, blah, 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 you know, this, that. Sex, well, whether they're having it or not, is something that's on their minds a lot. Man, as soon as you start dating, the question of when are we going to have sex? Are we going to have sex? Do we have sex? How do we have sex? How does this work? Right? I swear, if someone could figure that part out, dating would be pretty straightforward, wouldn't it? Right? Do I like you? Yeah. Do you like me? Yeah. Let's figure that out, right? You throw sex in there and suddenly this thing becomes complex and deep and who are we going to, how are we going to do this and should we do this and I want to do this. Feel guilty about doing this. Talked to someone just recently, her and her partner have an amazing sex life. They said they have matched sex drives. That's how they described it. Our sex drives are matched. Your faces are all like, really? That's a thing? It's pretty funny to watch you guys. No problems when they're having sex, but when she goes back to her fundamentalist family, all of a sudden she's feeling guilt. Oh, I shouldn't do that. Something wrong with me. Regardless of where you think about sex, I think Andy Warhol had it right. What, can you throw that up for me, Esmond? I don't know the question, but sex is definitely the answer. I've been watching myself even over this last while, talking about sexuality and sex, and kind of being really aware of my own reactions to things. Where my hang-ups are, where things I can feel myself getting tense, or, ooh, what's going on there? Probably the latest numbers we have are somewhere north of 99% of us are sexual beings. We're growing in an understanding of asexuality, and so some people, they just have no sex drive. That's okay. But for 99%+ of us, we do. And it's complex. But it's also kind of beautiful, isn't it? What's the line from George Michael? Can you throw those lyrics up for me? I just had the song playing. Sex is natural, sex is good, not everyone does it, but everyone should. Whether you're partnered, whether you're monogamous, whether you're not monogamous, whether you're serial monogamous, whether you're dating, whether you're not by yourself, sex spans the whole thing. And we, as human beings, again, 99% of us, sex infiltrates every part of our lives, doesn't it? From how we dress, to how we interact with someone. You see someone on the street that you have a sexual connection with, your body changes. You know, how your hormones function in your body changes. Everything changes. We know that people who have regular sex live longer, have less anxiety, have less stress in their lives. One of the researchers, his name is Stan Tatkin, says of one component of sexuality, and I want you to think of sex really, really broadly today, folks, but one portion of the orgasm, he said, if I could write a script, like you know what, when you go to the doctor, you get a prescription. If I could write a script for people to have orgasms, I would be writing them all day long just to keep people healthy. He says there's nothing better for our nervous system. There's nothing better for our relationship. There's nothing better. I think he's got something there personally, but. So my question for you to start this off is, how's your sex life? Please don't answer me out loud. Just, this is in your head. He's lying. Think about it. Is it broad and full and full of pleasure and enjoyment? Or is it repressed? Stifled? Is it healthy and whole and untainted? Or is there trauma there? Repression? Shut down? Are you wholeheartedly connected right from your brain all the way through your body? Is it all connected? Or are we living in these separate worlds where our brain's one way and our body's another way? How's your sex life? Again, I don't care if you're partnered or by yourself. Sex works everywhere, right? Today I want to do my best to try and improve your sex life. It's a pretty lofty goal, huh? I'm going to do my best. We're going to do it science-y, so just it's me, so we have a little science in here, right? In order to get you there, I want to start doing a couple things. I want you to get a deeper understanding of yourself, and I want you to have a much deeper understanding of your partner if you're partnered. In order to do that, I want to talk about how we get to sex. Arousal. 1997 was a really important year for drug companies. Anyone ever heard of this thing called angina? It's where the veins in your heart, there's something goes wrong with them, and actually I don't even know what it all is, but basically your heart doesn't get the blood it's supposed to get. I should have asked Esmond on the way in. He's a pharmacist, so he can tell me all this stuff. And so my dad and my grandmother had little nitro, remember they had those little nitro things? So this little like medicine they kept in their pocket all the time, and when they all of a sudden they'd have these, it looked like a heart attack. All of a sudden they're clutching their chest. They'd drop a nitro and it would open everything up and they'd be like, oh, okay. Then they'd have a wicked headache for, you know, the next day or so. But in 1997, we were looking at this going, there's gotta be a way to fix this. There's so many people who are struggling with this. And so drug companies said, well, let's see what we can do. And so they went through all their catalog of drugs and one company found a drug. It's called, oh geez. Okay, phosphodiesterase inhibitor. Esmond, did I get it? No. It's a word that sounds kind of like that, but it's more like better. So here's what they did. They found this drug and they started to test it. And it seemed like it was working. They got a bunch of volunteers into the first round of testing. They gave them this drug and it seemed to be helping with their hearts. Second round of drugs, or testing. Again with volunteers, they bring out this drug, it seems to be working. They've put millions of dollars into this thing. Millions. And if they can get past that third test, they call it the mass human trial. Like, they are in the money. Not to mention, let's think the best of the pharmacy people. They actually could help the world, right? Like, this is a big deal. And so they roll out this massive drug trial with random people selected from all over society. And they give them this drug, and they test it, and they look at the results, and nothing happened. Statistically, sweet. I was going to swear, but I won't, because it doesn't need to swear right now. Nothing. It wasn't doing anything. Statistically, they're like, we could have given them, you know, sugar pills. It would have done as much. Which was odd, because the people who were part of the test, who it completely failed on, started coming back and asking for more. So are you what, the drug that doesn't work? I said, yeah. I said, why? What's up with this drug? They said it's saving our marriage. You see, this is what the drug used to be called. Now it's called that. Viagra. And for the first time in history, what age took away from men, science brought back sexually. Men could actually have an erection. You're all looking at me like, what's the big deal? It's a big deal, folks. But here's the thing. The reason I want to tell you the story isn't because of that. I'm going to tell you the story because of what they tried next. Because they said, wait a second. If this is working for men, women report sexual desire issues twice as often as men. If we can figure out a Viagra for women, we are going to be making like unbelievable amounts of cash. Now, Viagra makes multi-billion dollars. That's B. That's what they've made off this drug. And so if they can figure out a way to make or give women a Viagra equivalent, Pfizer is going to be like the richest company in the world, right? So here's what they did. They took Viagra, gave it to women, nothing happened. They're like, ah, crap. They went through their whole list of chemicals, chemical after chemical after chemical. Nothing worked. Nothing. And with that much money to gain, they are throwing everything they got at it, like just like blank checks or just, you know, as much as we can. After however many years of testing and whatever they could do to figure out this thing, they realized that drugs, as far as we understand, does not connect to female sexuality. Males, works great. Females, not so much. Now they did one more test. This was another group of people. They basically took women and men. They put probes in their genitals so you can see if there's blood flow. And then they gave them a little, like, thing to respond to answers. How turned on do you feel? And then they showed them pictures of erotic things. Here's what we learned from this study. Women's bodies are turned on by almost anything. Like exercising people at the gym, straight sex, gay sex, didn't matter what sexual orientation you were, if there's people having sex, like crazy stuff. Women's bodies were turned on. Their brains weren't. Their brains were only turned on by the things that they felt they should be turned on by. This is a very important thing. Women's bodies, again, statistically, I'm going to draw a big bell curve here. Some of you women are not going to fit in the middle, but most of you do. Men, when I say men, it's kind of the bell curve, right? Some of you are not like this at all, but most of you sit in the middle. Women's body's arousal is disconnected from their brain's arousal. They literally can get your body chemically turned on, and women would be like, meh, I got nothing. Men, if you can arouse their bodies, their brains are connected. Only things that their brains were turned on by were things that their bodies were turned on by, and vice versa. Now you see in heterosexual relationships how complex this is going to get? Well, because everyone's just like me, right? My female partner's just like me, right? Her body and brain work together, right? And she's looking at him going, what do you mean your body and brain work together? Like, that doesn't even make any sense. Here's what the researchers said. It wasn't just behaviors of men and women that seemed different. Their brains seemed different too. One of the people described it as software on our brains. The brain hardware seems fairly similar. There's some differences, but we're still kind of up in the air of whether or not how different it is and what that means. But what's running on the brains works really differently. So here's the first thing I want you to get. Men and women are different sexually. And all you same-sex couples out there, I'm so jealous of you guys sometimes. Today's that day. Must be way easier for you guys, right? So let's look at how we're different. What is the difference that's fundamentally shaping our sexuality? So just imagine now, you're a cave woman. All y'all, I want you all to be a cave woman about 20,000 years ago. You're sitting in a cave. You have like a lion skin wrapped around your waist or something. I don't know what you wore. You have to pick berries to eat. Somebody maybe kills an animal and you get some of that. But your life is basically living in a cave in the middle of the desert trying not to die. Then along comes a nice cave gentleman. You're like, how are you doing, buddy? He's looking good. He's got like a leopard skin one on, you know. extra fancy. Now here's the thing. If you just go for it, if you just be like, hey, I want to have sex with him, he wants to have sex with me, let's just do this. Think about what's going to happen. Potentially in 9 months, you are now pregnant. Well, you're actually going to have a baby in 9 months. You're pregnant right away, right? Sorry, guys. You're in a cave in the middle of nowhere having a baby potentially by yourself. What are the odds of you living through that? Not great. And even if you do live through that, think about what happens for the next 16 years maybe as you're raising a child. How much energy and work and time you're going to need to put into this child for you both to live. So evolutionary biologists said, you know what? I think what happened, and the science currently is supporting this. They said, I think what happened is the women, the people with wombs, because this is only people who can have babies, right? The people with wombs who just jumped into the hay with the next person, kind of evolution selected not for them. The people with wombs who could say, yeah, you're looking good, but you know what? I'm not sure I want to put that much time and effort into just a roll in the hay with you. Like, I got to think of 9 months from now. I got to think for the next 15 years. The ones whose brains could parse that out long term and say, I'm actually going to stop the desire that I feel in order to live. Evolution seemed to select for those. There's this idea in sexual psychology that says we have, you know, we've all heard of sex drive, right? We talk about sex drive all the time. There's a new model that comes out that says we have a sex drive, it's an accelerator, and we have a sexual break. You ever been behind someone who's driving with 2 feet on, you know, one on the gas pedal, one on the brake, and the car is like jerking around, and it's like, that's how our sexuality works. And you see, for women, the last 20,000 years, we've been selecting for this trait that says, I can think long term. In the last 100 years is the first time you guys have actually been able to say, I don't know if I want to have a baby or not, and I can still have sex. With the advent of the condom and the pill. But here's the problem. Our nervous system hasn't seemed to caught up with that yet. We're still cave people living in a cave going, if I have sex, this might be a baby. And so one of the fundamental things the researchers, I read studied two books for this. The first one is A Billion Wicked Thoughts. This, not PG-13, so read it with caution, but this book is fantastic. A bunch of statisticians who are neurologists who study sexuality through the internet. They basically figure out not what you guys would say on a survey, because you lie on a survey, right? Well, that's not a good answer. I'm going to say no to that one. What they rather did is they downloaded people's search histories and figured out what's going on with people when they're at their most anonymous. And they started to figure out, wait a second, we're not the same. We do things differently. Women tend to have a sexual break. Men have it too, it just tends to be in a different place. So here's my question for you. First, all the women in the audience. And I don't care if you're straight, gay, I don't care what it is. This applies to everybody. Do you know what your sexual breaks are? Is it you just met the person and you don't have a clue? You know, is this person safe or not safe? Is it you don't feel comfortable where you are, safe? Is it risk of pregnancy? Let's go deeper than that. Is it how connected you feel to your partner? If you feel disconnected to the person you're going to have sex with, does your break come on? Can you feel it? Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You'll often feel it. You'll be feeling into sex and then all of a sudden it'll just stop. It's like, the break hits. There's nothing wrong with having a sexual break. In fact, it's a pretty beautiful thing that's tried to protect you for the last 20,000 years. This isn't something to be fixed. This isn't something to feel guilty about. This is something to be celebrated. But it's also something to be understood. So do you know your sexual breaks? Is that how much energy you have left? What's going on with the kids? How much stress you have at work? 80% of women, as your stress increases, your sex drive drops. It's basically the brake comes on. 20% of women, it works the other way. Men, of course, are flipped. How we got together, I have no clue. But we're back to like, seriously, same-sex couples, you guys have this, like, this makes sense. I read another book, it's called Come As You Are. Fantastic read. This one's PG-13. Not by the cover, but seriously it is. If you're a woman and you want to understand your sexuality at a deeper level, this is a must read. She's got a couple TED Talks as well. She's fantastic. So do you know your sexual breaks? Not do you feel ashamed of them, not do you have to get rid of them, do you understand them? If sex has ever been a traumatic piece of your life, there's going to be some sexual breaks connected to that, almost guaranteed. Do you understand that? If you love a woman, do you understand her sexual breaks? Do you understand what she needs in order to feel safe to let that break off and engage in sexuality with you? Do you know that? Because if you don't, this is not going to go well for you. It's kind of like, you know, walking through a minefield. You never know when you're going to get blown up because you also need to hit a break and it's like, boom, well, that didn't go the way I planned. So first, do you know your sexual breaks? And partners, do you understand their sexual breaks? Not shaming them for it, but honoring them for it. Celebrating them. Work with them. Understand them. I heard a really horrible story. It's a bunch of women sitting around in a room, and they were talking. They're all married, straight women. And they're sitting around talking in a room, and one of them says, oh, it's been X amount of time, and my husband's probably going to have sex now. Great. And one of the people says, well, just get a little drunk and have sex anyways. Take that break that's protected you your whole life, that 20,000 years of women have instilled in you, and just ignore it. I'm sure that'll help your relationship, right? Every time you force yourself to have sex that way, you don't think your nervous system's going, wait a second, I just got forced to have sex that I don't want, and the person who's doing it is my husband. You don't think that's going to mess up your sex life? Women, there's a difference between your physical arousal and your mental arousal. And so if you're not careful, you can have sex by getting physically aroused without the mental arousal. But that just basically takes your break and says, screw you. I can't think that that's healthy for a whole integrated body and mind woman. I'm not here to tell you what to do. But if that's what you think sex is, I think there's something fundamentally wrong with that. I think our break is there for a reason. And I think we honor it. We don't override it. But ultimately, this is going to be your choice. Okay, I taught you a little bit about women's sexuality. Let me tell you something about men's sexuality. Oh yeah, I talked to another couple. They're at some, I can't remember what it was, maybe like a clinic or something like that, and his wife walks around the corner with their kids. She's like, you know, had a day of like errands and running around, and like, She's dressed in whatever, right? Her hair is like whatever. She runs around the corner, and for some reason her husband happens to be there at the exact same moment. He walks around the corner, she walks around the corner, he's like, hey! And he tells her the story later on. He says, I came around the corner, I saw you. I totally wanted to have sex with you in that moment. She's literally like, you know, like wrangling kids, trying to figure out where we're going. And he sees her. And something about her in that moment, he's just like, wow. Wow. You see, back to the 20,000 year old, years ago cave woman, you're now a caveman. And here's the deal. 80% of women in history have had their genes propagated. We think in evolutionary stance that propagating our genes is something that's really important to us. Having kids, making sure that our, who we are goes on, right? It's a fairly common drive that we talk about. 80% of women have had their genes propagated through history. So when we look at our genetic code, it's made up of 80% of women. Yay you guys, by the way. Only 40% of men have had their genes passed along. 40%, that's less than half. That's less, of all men, that's less than half, and it's half the number of women. Fundamentally, just like there's a break wired into the female, there's something wired into the male that says, okay, let's say you're walking down the street one day and you run into a nice cave woman and she's giving you the like, how you doing? Huh? She wants to have sex with you. Now, you can do one of two things. You can ask her, be like, well, you know, I need to get to know you a little bit, and if we could like go on a long walk or down the beach, I could, you know, maybe see if we're connectable, right? And then, you know, if maybe if we can meet your family, and then we'll decide if maybe even sex is on the table. You're now the 60% of men who do not have your genes passed along. I know it sounds ridiculous, but here's the truth. Evolution seems to select for men who are ready and able to have sex like this. They did a test or a study recently, and they brought a couple attractive, not attractive, just regular attractive women, dressed them in regular clothes. They're research psychologists, and they sent them out onto a campus in Florida. And they walked up to random male students, and they asked them one of three questions, and they just wrote down the answer. Here's the three questions. Will you go on a date with me? Will you come to my apartment with me? Or will you sleep with me? They just asked them one of those questions. 50% of males said yes to the date for someone they've never met before. 50%. 75% said yes to sex. There's a part of us that kind of feels like, well, that's not right. But remember, for the last 20,000 years, evolution seems to be selecting for people who are able to have sex like that. I walked around the corner, saw my partner, and was ready to go right like that. Boom, 0 to 60. You guys are all so quiet right now. The researchers of A Billion Wicked Thoughts describe it this way. An or mentality of sexual cues, meaning there's something that turns you on. So this is how it works for most men. She has nice hair, or she has a sexy smile, or I'm turned on by her legs, or any one of those things happen, he's turned on. Researchers describe women this way. If he has nice hair, and if he has sexy legs, and if I feel connected to him, and right? The brake is just like pumping the brake, like, whoa, 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 whoa. We're not just going to jump into bed with any random stranger we find attractive. Men, accelerate to the floor. Bam, let's do this. So men, do you know your cues? Do you know the things that turn you on about either other men or other women, depending on what your sexual orientation is? Do you know them? The looks on your faces are all like, yes, but I'm not going to tell you them, Clausen. Here's the deal. We've been shamed for these sexual cues most of our lives. If you came from Jeff's messages, you know that the church was brutal in saying any sexual attraction you have to another person is by definition wrong. They always bring out this verse, if you look at a woman with lust in your heart or something like that, you might as well poke your eye out. Pretty lame. Now, hopefully last week I talked enough about pleasure and the positivity about pleasure in the Bible. In fact, there's a whole book on just like basically looking at sexy people and describing them. There's a whole book in the Bible about that. So men, do you know your sexual cues? And are you okay with them? No judgment, no shame, no hiding. No seeing someone that you find attractive and doing this. I don't know what to do with this. God. You have years of that tension in your body. Could we be okay with being or kinds of sexual cues? Yeah, that aroused me. Yeah, that aroused me. Some moms were telling me stories of their little boys. One of them comes into a mall, looks at a Victoria's Secrets like poster. 5-year-old kid, like this big, like walks up, looks at this like giant girl with like bikini or lingerie on. Says, "Mom," says, "What?" "My penis is going up and I can't even stop it." He's 5. Now we can beat that out of him. We can try and separate his physical arousal from his mental arousal, like evolution seems to have done for people with wombs. Or we can understand that that's how it works for him. Evolution is selected for that. For him to be able to be aroused like that. We don't shame him. We don't beat him up. We don't do anything with him. We just honor it. So now here's where it gets a little bit more complex. Those of you who love men, who are in relationship with men, do you know your partner's cues? Are you okay with your partner's cues? Do you feel threatened by your partner's cues? Can you honor his cues? This is where it gets tricky, doesn't it? Again, we're back to the, you know, homosexual relationships make a lot more sense in this moment, don't they? But for the straight people in the room, do you get this? Have you done the work to not be triggered by this? Sometimes the male arousal comes in so fast and so hot, your reaction is like, whoa, 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 like I don't feel safe. The brake comes down hard, right? And you suddenly have this kind of blow up moment where it's like, well, what just happened here? I find you attractive. I find this about you sexy. That turns me on. And here's the thing, folks. The number of things that turn guys on are as many as there's things in the world. It doesn't matter age, it doesn't matter size, it doesn't matter activity, it doesn't matter anything. There's somebody out there who's going, damn, what you got going on right there? And sometimes it's only one thing. Your eyes. Your butt in those jeans. The smell of you. I remember one guy, we were biking, he's like, I smelled this girl. We're all like, dude, do not smell girls on the trail. Seriously. We're going to get arrested here. Do you understand their cues? Do you honor them? There's a beautiful story that you probably have never heard in church before, but I'm going to tell you anyways. A friend of mine, there was a lot of mismatch in the sexual arousal of her and her partner. Her partner got turned on like that. She did not. This was problematic for them, right? One day she picked up a book. I don't know even how she got it. She started reading it. She was like, ooh, this is a really good book. It was a Harley Quinn romance. Like, you know, with Fabio on the cover, like, that was my best Fabio. You like that? And she found that as she's reading this thing, the formula of these books are working. She's getting all like, the brakes coming off, the accelerator is coming down. She's like, I like this. She's been reading them voraciously. So here's what she does. She reads her Harley Quinn romance, gets herself all turned on, her brake all off, and then she goes and finds her husband and kind of gives him one of the sexual cues that she's got. And she's like, boo! And he's like, let's do this. Their sex life, she says, has never been better. She honored her brake. She honored his accelerator. And they found a way to meet in the middle. Now, I'm not telling you guys you need to read Harley Quinn romance. That's not what I'm here to do. Though if you're into that, more power to you. That whole A Billion Wicked Thoughts will tell you more about why those books work than you will ever want to know. But it is fascinating. Let me say one more thing before I end. Arousal does not mean people are taken over. This is what the church taught me. If I'm aroused by a person, I will rape them. This is what they taught my sister. If someone is aroused, you arouse somebody, they will rape you. Now, it was never that black and white. It was never like, they never used the word rape. They just said, if you awaken desire, you can't stop it. That's bullshit. Arousal does not negate choice. Arousal does not take over your brain. You do not somehow become possessed by this, regardless of what 50 Shades of Grey says to you. We all have a choice. Arousal never negates that choice. And I think a healthy sexuality, a beautiful sexuality between two people, is two people who are, let their arousal come to the table, but also are mindful of each other. And are in a dance that watches where they are and where I am. And knows enough about each other's breaks and triggers and sexual cues that you're in a dance together, going to the same place where you're fully invested in sexuality. That, I think, is beautiful sexuality. And I think it can happen anywhere. But it doesn't mean that sex equals violence. We have to let that go. So today, I gotta get finished. You learned men and women are different. Not all men, of course, and not all women are the same. But if you look at the genders, we're different. Bisexual women tend to be more in the middle. Gay men tend to be a little bit more similar to men in most areas, and in some areas, very similar to women. So whoever you are, whatever your sexuality is, you gotta learn it. Not from shame, not from I have to do this for my partner, not because there's something wrong with me, none of that stuff. No, because we're beautiful human beings. We got 20,000 years of history that have shaped us, that have colored our sexuality. And if we don't work with it, I don't think it works that well. So honor your brakes. They're there to protect you. If you're feeling like you need to pump the brake, stop and be like, whoa, 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 I just lost all of my arousal. What's going on here? And if you have a good partner, they're going to go, okay, what happened? Help me understand you. Help me make you feel safe so the brake can come off and we can have a blast together. And if your arousal is like an accelerator that hits the floor at 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, there's no need to be embarrassed about it. There's no need to feel guilty. There's no need to hide that. That's 20,000 years of history shaping how your brain works. Can you honor it? And for those of you who are partnered with people with an accelerator like that, can you honor their accelerator? Can you even go to that next level and do the work to get your accelerator down and break off and then say, hey, you want to get busy? Folks, I think there's a reason why the Bible put an entire book of sex poetry. The authors of the Bible put that into the Bible. I think it's part of who we are. Nothing to feel ashamed about, nothing to feel guilty about, nothing to avoid. But that doesn't mean we're not complex human beings. And regardless of the gender of our partner, we have to figure out what works and what doesn't for them. So here's your homework. Go home and start exploring what's going on inside of you. Find your brakes. Find your accelerators. If you're by yourself and solo, you get to just have fun with that. If you're with a partner, it's a lot harder because you got to talk to them about it, and that sucks. Because there's a lot of openness and there's a lot of vulnerability, a lot of like, ooh, you probably think I'm a creep, but this is how it works for me. Open yourself up. Figure out what works for you and share that with your partner so you can have the best sex of your life. That's all I'm going to say on that. Folks, next week, sex is done, so you all can take a deep breath. I've never seen you so quiet for a whole morning. We're starting a new series about how to interact as human beings. So this next series is set up to build off this series because you're going to have some conversations, and that's okay. This next series is going to help you do those conversations. Jeff starts next week. It's going to be a blast. Have a great week, everybody. Parenting workshop is just in the library right there. We'll see y'all next week. Have a great week, guys.